That's right. I plugged it in. So. Okay. So I'll introduce the next speakers here. First, I'll introduce Mary Jo Long. Mary Jo is a member of the Afton Town Board, elected on the Green Party, who has served on numerous boards, including Northeast Organic Farming Association, New York, and the Central New York Occupational Health Clinic.
Does that work? Oh, okay, great. Yeah, it works really well. Okay. Got another one? Okay, all right, I'll try. I am more interested in hearing other people's comments and concerns than my particularly picking out some things to talk about. So I just am going to make a few short comments. I think some other people will make a few short comments, and then we're going to have questions and comments, and you know, if there's information that any of us here have that we can help, you know, expand the level of information and understanding, that's good. I think the one thing I might just point out, and I kind of wish I would have done it before the movie started, is in the West, land is, the owners of the surface don't necessarily own the rights to the subsurface, and that's different than in New York State. I am a lawyer, by the way, so I mean, I didn't know if that was mentioned. But in New York State, at present, if you own land, unless there's something specific in your deed, and that's highly unusual, you also own the subsurface rights. So there's a different. Oh, really? Okay. Oh, there's a different reaction. Only in the sense that the gas drilling that will occur here is usually through private leases rather than government leases, okay? And I've attended a lot of meetings of people who are interested in getting a good gas lease because they own land. And there are groups who do that. That's not particularly what I'm interested in talking about today or tonight. As a member of the town board, I've been particularly concerned about the impacts on all of us. I find that people who own land and have signed leases, whether they consider them good or bad leases, expect their local governments or their state governments to protect those rights that apply to all of us. I also have spoken to a lot of people who don't own very much land. They have a little postage stamp parcel in a town or a village, and they think that this gas leasing doesn't affect them because they're not being asked to sign a lease. But that's not true. And I think that although this movie was about something going on in the West, it was an opportunity for people to begin to see what our landscape might look like if we have this industrial if and when this industrial activity moves in. I think that many of the things that the movie had to say are relevant. And I think that our land is just as precious to us, and our water and our landscape and our rural life is just as precious as that public land. And that's the one thing, you know, I think the movie people here who made this think of that place as unique, and it probably it is. I've seen some of it, and it's very beautiful, but it's unique here too. And so those concerns apply to us as well as to the people out there in the Rocky Mountains. So my concern is that we have in place protections and demand certain things that would if not prevent, at least mitigate. And I think that we have to talk about what we want to do. Some landowners see it as a way of getting money, and I understand that, but there are things that leases do not protect, and those include water, concerns about water, concerns about noise, concerns about air pollution, and probably other things I haven't mentioned. So, you know, when we have this question and answer session, I hope you will bring up what your concerns are, and hopefully we will have a dialogue about that, okay? And I'm going to hand this over to Mike Bernhard.
According to this, Mike is a New York Green Party state committeeman from Shenango County and a graduate of Democracy School. He's a Shenango County representative to Shenango Delaware Otsego Gas Alliance. I'm going to start my address by asking a question. Who in this room is an elected public official? Wonderful. Wonderful. I want to ask if there are people here who have leased their property. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. And are there people that look forward to leasing property if they can be assured that it is done in an environmentally reasonable manner? There are people that would like to lease land if it could be done under some restrictions that they propose or demand. And are there people here who oppose gas drilling, drilling for gas in principle, and don't want to see? That's very interesting. Me too. I think that although there are some benefits that will accrue to those of you who have leased, and maybe some costs that will accrue to those of you who have leased, those of us who just raised our hand are very concerned that this country, being led by corporations as it is going for some short-term gain in a way that's going to put us deeper into the hole when it comes to energy. We know that, as the man on the screen said, we should be talking about conservation, and even though some of us remember the price of gas in 1973, going up as high as a dollar. We know, most of those people know that when President Carter put hot water heaters on the White House, when Reagan came in, he took them down. So we've wasted 32 years, 36 years, not pursuing anything that will lead to a solution. I mean, I think a lot of us in this room feel that way, and I don't think that people in this room are any longer, certainly where I operate, people are not any longer saying the problem is those people that are leasing. The problem is that we have a government that is in place and has rules in place so that the gas companies have the upper hand and we have no power. And it's us having no power that I see is the problem, whether it's power lines or pipelines or corporate farms or sludge dumping. The problem isn't the gas drilling or that the gas drilling has to be carried out in a destructive manner. The problem is that we haven't got the right to decide. Thank you.
My name is Julian. I'm here not as a speaker, but as a facilitator, and we'll be introducing what that role is so we can have a good discussion here and make sure that everyone's voices are heard. As a brief introduction, I grew up around here on Seneca Lake. I've been away from home on and off for the past 6 years, and in that time, I've had the privilege of being able to meet people around the country and around the world who are also facing energy developments on their land. And have seen some of the more advanced effects of what's happened to people through that. Most pronouncedly in southern Appalachia, there's mountaintop removal coal mining, and I've been down there a couple times and seen what's happened over generations going from the deep drilling form of technology of it to the strip mining, which is a huge battle, and then from strip mining to mountaintop removal coal mining, where they're literally taking away entire mountain ranges and filling in the valleys with toxic sludge. And there's been a lot of regulations on this, but despite that, there's still a massive depopulation and people being pushed out of their homes, people paying $70 water bills for water that comes out red or brown and is cancerous. There's 7-year-old kids hooked up on asthma machines and oxygen machines so they can sleep at night. And so from witnessing what's happened there, I've also witnessed the positive aspect of that in terms of people coming together across a huge range of differences and really finding common ground in terms of protecting their livelihoods, finding alternative ways of making a living off of the land through cottage industries and through other alternative economies in their homelands, and really people who would never sit face-to-face on a table and think that they had something in common, being able to find that. And then once they've done that in their own communities, in their own neighborhoods, made amazing links with other people fighting the same kind of coal developments on their lands, whether it's Navajo lands in Arizona, or Aboriginal lands in Australia, or indigenous lands in Venezuela. People seeing that there's across these huge differences, a lot of commonalities of people just trying to survive and trying to live and be healthy and raise kids and put food on the table, and recognizing that there is a common enemy there, that if we band together and can work through these things, there's a lot of benefit to that happening. But there are also a lot of social divisions that must be worked through to make that happen, which is some of the reasons that myself and Dirk are going to be here to make sure that we can hear each other tonight, we can have a conversation, and we're going to set out a few guidelines for how to have a conversation work well in that way.
My name is Dirk Tracy, and I've lived here around Ithaca for the past 5 years. I work with the Ithaca Free School. Sure. I work helping to organize with the Ithaca Free School, which is a decentralized skill sharing network here in town, and I just like group process a lot, so I'm in this role here tonight.
Okay, so the few different roles that we have here to help this conversation go, Dirk and I are going to be co-facilitating, which basically means that we're just going to help keep the conversation moving. If people are talking for too much, we'll just kind of remind them gently to step back a little bit and encourage people who haven't spoken to be able to step up and have their voices heard. Over here on the right, we have Ryan, if you could stand up. Ryan's going to be note-taking on the board here. And basically the role of the note taker, in addition to recording what people are saying, is also to try and draw out some common themes so that out of the broad diversity of concerns and questions that people have, we can start trying to find what are some of the common themes that we're all interested and concerned about. And then on the far side here is Dusky, who's going to be the stack taker, which is a very important role. Basically what that involves, if you want to speak, raise your hand, and Dusky will make eye contact with you and write you down so that when it's your turn to speak, then he'll call on you. It's going to be a weighted stack, which means that if some people haven't spoken at all yet, they'll be bumped farther up online compared to those who haven't spoken yet. And here are some of the guidelines we have before we get underway with our conversation.
Okay, so the first guideline that we're gonna have for the conversation is we're going to ask that folks try to be aware of using acronyms or discussing unfamiliar bureaucratic processes that folks might not be aware of, to just try to give context and to explain what acronyms are. Try to keep the conversation on a level that people without specialized background knowledge will be able to participate in.
Another thing to remind people is that there is no one right strategy for addressing this issue. We need to discuss and brainstorm all possible responses and have them work together rather than arguing over what's the one best way to approach this issue.
We're also going to ask that that there's no personal attacks.
Good one. Just a reminder, try to be concise and notice if you're talking a lot. Step back and make room for others to speak.
Following on that, we're going to ask that folks not interrupt one another.
And like I said before, if you want to speak, just raise your hand, and the stack taker, Dusky there, will take note of it and call on you.
All right. And also, we're going to ask that we respect differences of opinion and perspective, and that we, in our own process of thinking about this, that we look for the points of intersection and common concern amongst the various perspectives that will come out in the conversation.
Before you speak, if you could stand up, if you feel comfortable, and say your name so people know who you are.
And also, please make it clear if you have a question that one of the speakers who spoke earlier should respond to before we move on to the next person on the stack.
Okay. So now, if there are any questions, concerns, oh, there we go.
Yes, the answer is yes. The state of New York, through both, I think, Department of Environmental Conservation and maybe the Comptroller's Office, are negotiating leases with oil companies for the leasing of state land. I don't know specifically which ones. The state, at least as far as I'm aware, has been pretty quiet about it, although DEC does admit that they've been doing some negotiating of leases.
It's also the case that the leases that are negotiated by the state of New York, the leases negotiated by the state of New York are at the legal minimum of royalty payments, which of course drives down the price of royalty payments for everybody else.
Hi, Barbara. well, the leases in general provide, let me back up and say, I've looked at a few different leases. They're not all identical, but the leases that I've seen provide not only that the person, the landowner, is giving basic unlimited access to their own groundwater, but also surface rights for pipelines running out of the well onto, you know, to the next property. And most of the leases also have things about storage facilities. And I'm told that a lot of times the length of the lease keeps running as long as there's, well, I know that the length of the lease it gets bumped over as long as gas or something is being stored there. And so, I don't know, does that answer your question? Or do you mean for people who haven't signed leases? Oh. Important enough to take the property by eminent domain and run gas pipelines across lands of people who didn't sign leases. Yes. I think so. The Department of Environmental Conservation has said that they have two responsibilities. One is to protect the environment, and the other is to fully develop the natural resources. And of course, that seems contradictory, probably. At least it does to me. And so I feel that at the present, the DEC is very much interested in the second goal because it generates revenue to the state of New York. They get to collect a tax in a couple of different ways. And so I, you know, my sense is that they will consider it very important, and they certainly could try to use eminent domain. That's one of the reasons we're kind of trying to organize people against it.
Number one is it coming from Dallas, Texas. I do know that there is I forget the term. I think it might be forced unitization, where if there is a drilling unit being put together and there's a one loan or a few holdouts, that they can be forced.
We call it compulsory integration in New York State. Compulsory.
Okay, so it does exist.
Yes.
My second question is it possible to, from my understanding, the leases are always negotiable, and granted, a company may not want to play ball if you negotiate for not allowing storage of, you know, used water that was used in fracking and whatnot, but is it possible to, you know, organize in communities of lands if you want to drill, if you want to lease the lands for drilling in order to negotiate a better deal?
Landowners groups are organized all around this area. In Chenango County, where I'm from, there are several different landowners groups. And so that's a strategy. I don't consider it. Oh, it's him. That's what. I think it's a strategy. I don't consider it a solution. A landowner can negotiate a lease that is as good as the two sides can agree on, but it doesn't deal with the roads, the water, the air, the noise. So it only it makes that relationship very personal between a corporation who has a profit motive and an individual landowner who has his or her own economic needs and interests. The interests of the community as a whole are not sufficiently addressed in these individual leases. They don't have to necessarily work in opposition to leases, but the leases themselves do not protect the general public with the general and common impacts of the gas drilling.
My understanding is that the state of New York is in kind of a financial crisis right now, the government itself. And so I would imagine that, and especially with the governor, as someone was mentioning, shrinking the unit size from 40 acres for drilling to 25, that they're going to try to push. It's in the government's best interest to get the money, to get the taxes from the drilling. So it sounds like it'll be an uphill battle.
Yeah, just hit that little green button. The bill that was passed recently by the New York State Legislature and then signed by Governor Patterson didn't uniformly make the units smaller. It's a very hard bill to read, the law, the way it's written. In some ways, it expands it. And I actually think Mike is more knowledgeable about, he's read the bill more times than I have, and I think could say something more directly on that.
Okay. I will. And I think that it's important not to get into the complexity of the law that governs drilling, although you can go and do this as you like. The bill in the Assembly was called A10526. And there was a similar bill in the Senate, and you can go look at it. And it's so complicated. What the essential thing that it did is that before this bill, there were spacings that were assigned, spacing drilling unit sizes and well spacings that were assigned to different formations. There's the Trenton formation, there's the Oriskany formation, there's Herkimer, and to each of these formations there were different depths, so that in certain formations 2,000 to 4,000 gives you a certain drilling area and so forth. The important thing about the bill, what it did, as far as I can understand, is that it took the situation beforehand where horizontal drilling, which is the Halliburton technique, horizontal drilling required in the previous, under the previous regulatory regime, it required a variance on the spacing that was, used to be 40 acres, okay, in some, let's say in a particular formation, or 160 acres. Now they have this technology that goes down and it goes way out, and it goes out in all directions. And what that technology does is it captures the gas that's in the vertical fractures. In the Marcellus, the fractures tend to be vertical, and there are free gas in them, I mean loose gas. So they want to go horizontally to cut through these fractures. Well, before this bill was passed, if they wanted to do that kind of drilling and not step across the boundary where the other gas company might own the next drilling unit. They actually expanded the drilling units so that this horizontal technology could happen without public hearings, because before this bill that was passed in April, horizontal drilling was a variance on a particular spacing. So they passed this bill and expanded the size of the drilling units so that horizontal drilling could be employed without there being any public hearings. And that's what happened. As a matter of fact, probably most people didn't know about horizontal drillings until the bill was passed. And it was passed on the last day of the legislature. And I want to point out that something about this film here. The 40-acre spacings that they showed there are generally what's allowable in the Marcellus region. It's at almost all depths. 40-acre spacing is allowable for straight down drilling. 40-acre spacing means you can end up with a grid where a quarter mile in every direction there's a well. They won't necessarily go that way. They would prefer to have a big pad in the middle of a square mile and drill horizontally. That makes more sense in this formation than drilling down, because when you're drilling down, you're trying to hit something that's already a fracture that's already vertical. And so they probably won't be drilling every quarter mile. But that is possible, and in some formations, that is the way to go. Some of the other non-Marcellus formations around here, that is the way to go. I want to point out that the Rhone Plateau that the hunting guy was talking about, it was, the feds did deal that out, and the state of Colorado got $52 million out of it, which is a bit less than AIG got.
Just a quick announcement. While people are talking and having questions here, there's going to be some clipboards passed around, and this is just a way for us to stay in touch with all of you and for you to say what your comments are or how to get involved or what your interests or skills are. So there's going to be about 5 or 10 clipboards that are being passed around. If you're interested in being involved and hearing more about this and other events in the future, please put your name down on those.
My name's Tim.
Please use it.
Eight years ago, we got together and the National Forest wanted to let people, let the gas companies come into the National Forest up there. And a lot of you may have been here and you signed on to our petitions. And the record of decision from the National Forest was that we are not going to allow oil and gas drilling up in our National Forest, which is like 6 miles west of here. It's only 18,000 acres, but you're more than welcome to come up there and see what goes on. We thank you for your support for that. The other shoe is, though, my wife owns a farm up there. It's 100-acre farm, and it's bordered on two sides by the National Forest. So when you got the gas companies coming to you and saying, would you like to lease your property, that's a pretty enticing operation when they say we're going to give you X amount of dollars per acre that you could use to run a 100-acre horse farm. So it's a scary situation. We have neither here nor there. Good luck.
I'd like to ask Ms. Long, excuse me, first of all, my name is Tina Wright. I'm a freelance journalist with an interest in this. I'd like to ask Ms. Long and Mr. Barnhart, where do you think that the gas companies will be getting their water for this? And, you know, kind of address the water thing in general, could you? Thanks.
Yes, I'm glad someone brought that up, because it's hard to say what's the most serious concern, because there are quite a few, but you know, water certainly is probably number one, or is number one in many people's minds. there are a number of concerns about the water. First of all, where is it coming from? This movie didn't particularly mention, but the horizontal drilling, which is the kind of new technology that is really has allowed the companies, the gas companies, to see the possibility of making some money out of the Marcellus Shale. The new technology of horizontal drilling requires tremendous amount of water. The numbers vary a little bit. It's in a range of from as little as 800,000 gallons to, I've seen it, estimates as high as 5 million gallons for a single fracking. And what Mike was talking about, how when the drill goes horizontally through various parts of the shale where there is gas trapped, what the companies do is they push all of this water down into that liquid. And mixed in with the water are a number of chemicals, which, by the way, the 2005 Energy Act exempted oil and gas companies from having to disclose and having to, were also made exempt from the Clean Drinking Water Act in that 2005 Energy Act. The chemicals that are mixed in with the water, DEC, before they realized that some people might know a little bit more than they did, were quoted as saying, "Well, the fracking fluid is water and soap and sand, right?" I think that water and soap and sand. Now, a lot of people knew that wasn't true because the federal agency required reporting of what was in fracking fluids for horizontal drilling out in the West until this 2005 Energy Act changed some of that. And, you know, the chemicals maybe aren't exactly the same, but there are a lot of very, very toxic chemicals. Again, DEC says, oh, but it's just a small percentage of 5 million gallons of water. But it's still a heck of a lot of brine fluid. They call it produced water when it comes up because they drive it in. About 80% of it comes back up, and then it has to be dealt with because it's polluted. It has all these chemicals mixed in with the water, as well as stuff from down below, you know, that have come up. And a lot of concerns have been with, well, what do you do with that produced water? You saw in the movie these evaporation pits. That's the way the gas companies like it. They, if required, they'll do a liner, a plastic liner. Sometimes they'll put it in metal tanks. Sometimes they'll try to push it back into the ground and just store it there on the land where, you know, the mining, where the well was drilled. Sometimes they truck it away. The initial millions of gallons of water, they've been in this area, they've been trying to take it out of the Susquehanna River. They take it out of the groundwater. People who have signed leases, those leases generally provide that they can take any water. They can drill wells. They can take water. And so, you know, obviously the companies would like to be able to get as much water as they can right there near where they're drilling the well. But they also, in Chenango County, right, they dropped that hose into a protected waterland, a wetland, that's it. And we're sucking out the water. The person who owned the land called DEC, and DEC said, well, that they weren't draining it dry, so there was really nothing that could be done, which again is discouraging because are not getting a sense that DEC is doing the first part of their job, which is to protect the environment, that they're really very focused on developing and exploiting as much as possible this natural resource. So the Susquehanna River Basin Commission, however, has put some limits on how much can be drawn at any one time. I think it's 600,000 gallons. Something like, 600,000 gallons at a time. So that's a and you have to have a permit. So, you know, there's some awareness that this is going to have a big impact on our water. DEC, I've gone to a lot of meetings, some of which DEC has spoken at, and the officials from DEC have said, oh, you know, we're gonna make sure we're gonna have an inspector at every well, and we're gonna make sure that everything is done well and done right. And I just am not seeing anything that really assures me of that.
Can I just make a quick announcement about microphone use? We are capturing this. There's maybe 100 people in this room right now, and we are capturing this on audio for radio play and also videotape. This potentially will go to hundreds of thousands of homes, 70,000 homes just in Binghamton, Ithaca Public Access. I don't know how many it goes to, but this meeting has tremendous educational value, so we really urge you, if you have a question, please, I know some people might have mic fright, but just switch the mic on and speak into it very closely to your mouth, and then when you're done, just turn it off. Thank you.
Yes, I had two questions. One you addressed partially. I was interested in what are the toxic chemicals. I understand that they're not telling us, but could we FOIL and find out what the toxic chemicals are? And two, if you are a property owner and you lease and they're drilling sideways, horizontally, can they drill under another person's property who does not have a lease?
Let me answer the second question first, and then I'll go back to the first one. If leasing in New York State will be done in units, and the size of the unit will vary, but the number I hear the most often is 640 acres. If the drilling company can sign up on leases 60% of the land that is in that unit, then any landowners who didn't sign a lease are made a part of that unit by a process called compulsory integration. That was what that other guy had asked about. And so they can take the gas under your land, even if you didn't sign a lease. They will pay you the statutory minimum royalty of 12.5%. That's in the law. You can do a little bit. Okay, so then, actually Mike knows even more about that. But in terms of the chemicals that are in the water, the DEC at first wasn't asking that. And because so many local concerned people were saying, well, what's in the water, what's in the water? I'm told Congressman Hinchey's assistant said something like he had asked the DEC, well, what else is in the water? And DEC's answer was, we could ask that. I mean, you know, the fact that they hadn't thought to ask that before someone brought it up was a bit of a concern. But the companies are calling it proprietary information, and they don't want to give it up. So then DEC is faced with a dilemma because the Freedom of Information Act does say these applications should be their public information. I'm not sure what they're going to do about that. There are these confidentiality agreements that sometimes a business tries to get a state agency to honor about proprietary information, and that's an exception under the Freedom of Information Act. But so we don't know how that's going to go for sure. The real difficulty, of course, is from the lawsuits that have happened out in Colorado and Wyoming and some of the other states where horizontal drilling's already been going on, is that it pollutes the water, but you have to prove that if you're the person saying, my well was polluted. I went to a presentation where they brought in people from the Powder River Basin and places in Wyoming and Colorado, and they said that people lost those lawsuits because they didn't have their well water tested before the drilling started, so they couldn't prove that these chemicals came from the gas drilling, even though it was obvious to the people who were speaking about it. And so I asked DEC at a municipal officials training that happened in Binghamton a while ago, well, you know, you got to tell us what the chemicals are so we can do a baseline test and show that those are not in the water before the gas drilling happens. And, you know, they haven't really responded by giving us a list. As a municipal official, I've been, you know, I'm on the town board of Afton. I mean, I want to be able to get the word out in terms of what to test for, because the water testing businesses, you have to tell them what to test for. I mean, they're used to testing for E. coli and, you know, certain kinds of bacteria and stuff like that. There are very specific things you have to test for to prove that, I mean, that are these, you know, like benzene and toluene. Hydrochloric acid, I know, is in it because in Chenango County, in approximately May, there was an accident, an explosion. The gas drilling company claims they were just doing a test, but the landowner talked to the newspapers, and you know, a couple of other landowners nearby saw that, you know, the wellhead, a concrete piece 8 feet by casing, you know, blew out of the well, and somebody was treated in the emergency room, and there was a whole bunch of things. And one of the things that that came up in that article when it finally got disclosed was the hydrochloric acid. So, you know, that's one I know. You know more about the...
I was talking about compulsory integration. Okay. I can't hear you. Yes, there's a bill in the assembly, I guess. Yeah. From a new... It's in committee. I wanted to talk about compulsory integration so that people can sort of put it behind them. Yes, if you are in a drilling unit that's 100 acres, if your property is contained, you have a half an acre with your trailer on it, or you live in a tent or whatever it is, and you own that much land. If you're in a 100-acre drilling unit, just make it simple, and somebody owns 60 of those acres and they lease, you're dead. I mean, nobody's going to come onto your property and start drilling. What they're going to be able to do is they're going to be able to drill on your under your land, and when they drill one of the problems that makes this a bigger problem than has been the case in the other 75,000 wells in New York State is that they're using they're exploding, they're doing this hydrofracking in the horizontal part of the drilling. They're doing hydrofracking, so even if you have not signed a lease, there's explosions going on below you. It takes about a million or 2 million gallons of fracking fluid per fracking, which has to be put under pressure by compressor trucks. I mean, essentially, they're, you know, if over there, if that's leased and you're not leased, then you're going to have the drilling going on under you and these explosions going on under you. They're many thousands of feet. You know, they're, 2,000, 3,000 feet deep. But the danger to your water sources is perhaps significant. The way that the compulsory integration works is that the state, once a driller who establishes the boundaries of the drilling unit that they want to have, they make that application when they have 60% of the property in their proposed drilling unit. Once that happens, then you get a letter saying that your property is subject to compulsory integration, and you're given three choices. You can throw some money into the project, that is, become a partner in the drilling and get a certain royalty rate. You can become a non-participating owner, which means that you will not receive any royalties until the costs of the gas company are covered three times, and then you start receiving your portion of the royalty. If you own an acre in a 100-acre parcel, you're going to get 1% of what the royalties that come out of it. And the default position is the one where you you're just called a royalty owner, I guess, and after some length of time, you start getting not the minimum royalty. It is not. It's 12.5% is the minimum that the state sets, but you will get the royalty that is paid to the you'll get the lowest royalty that's been paid in your unit. In other words, if the person that sold the 60 acres has gone for 15% and you own the other 40 acres, then you'll also get 15%. If there's a bunch of people and the royalty owner and the leaseholder is the people that are compulsorily integrated and have just become royalty owners, the default position, they get the royalty that is the lowest royalty paid to other people in that unit. That's generally 12.5%. That's what compulsory integration is about. It's about the state saying, we pretend that you have subsoil rights. You have subsoil rights that we can give away to the gas companies.
Before we go to the next person on stack, I just wanted to point out that we have about a half an hour left for discussion, and if people who are on stack or people who are signing themselves up can move more towards what kinds of things they'd like to see happening about this or what kind of ideas they have for what to do about it or how to put people together in communities. I'm sure there's a lot more questions out there, and there's a lot of information. If you check out the website, there's a lot of information online. I've spent hours and hours and hours just looking through different websites trying to figure out what this all is. So there's a lot of information out here. We could take up hours with some of the specifics. The website is the one that's on the card that was handed out. I don't have it off the top of my head. Yeah, it's on tables all over the place. Does anyone have a card around? All right. So if we can just start moving more towards personal experiences with these kinds of things and ideas of what we want to do about these concerns. Thank you.
I just wanted to point out also that for those of you who signed up, there is an email listserv, and so we can put you onto this email list, and then you can all be asking one another questions on the listserv as well.
Hi. I'm not going to identify myself because I work in this industry and I want to keep my job. I'm going to give you a real quickie. Keep your conversations brief. Let's do this in 60 seconds if we can. Thanks. They will lie to you. They will cheat you. Your neighbors will sell you out. And this is raising the price of land. I'm trying to buy some land for a rehabilitation home for veterans. And you can't buy land around here for less than $3,000 an acre. Why? Because you can make almost half that back, even if your neighbors are the ones who sign the lease. It'll drive your lands up. It'll raise your appropriations, as well as pollute your well, which will last until your grandchildren's time. Good luck with that.
Thank you. Hi. My name is Eva, and I have land adjoining a state forest. And I've been really concerned about how to find out about where do I get information about which state lands are up for consideration. That was one question. And then I have a kind of an oddball question, too. And that is that I've heard that some companies will buy the rights and then not do any drilling. So they've got the rights to your land, and then they're sitting on the resources, driving the price up and tying your land up. So I had one thought about, like, for people who actually do drill and who want that on their land and are willing to bear with the consequences, solution-wise, I was thinking that perhaps licenses should be limited to, you know, if you don't drill, if the gas company doesn't drill within a certain period of time or do something with it, they lose the rights. So that was one solution. But, I mean, I don't want my land drilled on. How do you find out about the state? stuff, the state lands?
I can't tell you how to do that, but you can ask the DEC, and you can probably navigate their website and find it out. It is out there. I can't, don't know what the URL is. The DEC considers it to be one of its obligations is to exploit this resource as fully and as completely as possible, and that's why they wrote the law that our Assembly and Senate people passed, making the spacing units conducive to horizontal drilling, because the horizontal drilling in the Marcellus Shale is the way to get all of the gas. And in fact, if you looked at that law, 810526, you'll see that there are, in fact, they're so anxious to get the gas companies to drill and get that resource that if they, in many situations, if they don't give you the equivalent of a well every 40 acres, that is every quarter of a mile in every direction, then they'll lose their right to do that. So the state actually forces the companies to fully exploit the resource by drilling up to. And you know, in other states, like in eastern states too, including West Virginia, I know, the state keeps on reducing the size. Where the drilling is vertical, the state keeps on reducing the size of the units, so that the state is actually urging the gas companies to put wells closer together, as I think in West Virginia, maybe something like 1,200 feet or something like that. So you don't have to worry that there are restrictions on the gas companies just sitting on the land. I mean, they might find it worthwhile to have a lease and lose it because the market is wrong or what have you, but the state is encouraging them to do it quickly.
Are there any other organizations that deal with state lands, that like activist organizations that are protecting state lands?
I don't know. No, I think it's more, the protection organizations that are interested in state lands are more like Trout Unlimited and Ducks Unlimited and local conservation, volunteer conservation groups, I think.
Huh.
Sierra Club. I just wanted to add to what Mary Jo said about the water. The DEC says that the protected wetlands that the wetlands that the DEC is protecting can be used as water sources. They can drop their hoses into any body of water. They have gone around, and since they need clean water, they have gone to cities and asked them to sell water. And Cooperstown and Otsego County, after concerted activist involvement, turned that down. But in Johnson City, New York, they're selling water. They're selling city water. Yeah.
Before I give the mic for the folks for the next comment, I just wanted to read off for the folks listening on radio that the website that we've been talking about for the Shale Shock Citizens Action Coalition is http://sites.google.com, sites, S-I-T-E-S, sites.google.com/site/site/NY Marcellus Shale, no spaces, no underscores. Marcellus Shale is NMARCELLUSSHALE.
I'm petrified of public speaking. Oh my God. I just wanted to say something really quick, and I hope, I don't know, I feel like this discussion went really technical, really quick, and I just wanted to give a really quick overview of why we're actually having this meeting right now and why we're so freaked out about gas drilling. In case there's anybody here who's not up to speed and hasn't been up to 2 in the morning researching this online. There's been gas drilling in New York State for 100 years. You've probably seen little wells up around Geneva or maybe in the Southern Tier. There's been some deeper horizontal gas drilling more recently in the southern tier. All of that has been in isolated areas. What's different about the Marcellus Shale is that it runs from western New York all the way over basically to almost the Hudson River Valley. It starts at the top of the Finger Lakes and runs all the way through the state, including the Catskills, including the Finger Lakes, into Pennsylvania, Ohio, what have you. So even though you don't see gas drilling here in Tompkins County or in a county surrounding that you live in, it will be coming to you. You know, we've seen the maps, the DEC grids. The Marcellus is there, and they plan to develop the whole state. The second thing is that this isn't a little pipe sticking out of the ground. These are large industrial-scale sites. So whether you have a one-well site that's going to be like 5 acres or you have a multi-wellhead site like the folks were talking about earlier with 8 to 16 wellheads on it, which is 10 acres, they've got a chain-link fence around them, they're a built-up pad. The gas is not free. It has to be pumped into the pipelines with compressors. So you have compressors running 24 hours a day on your gas wells. And the wells are long-lived. It's a slow, steady producer, and we're looking at 40 years. Right now, Tioga County is slated for development first, and then probably Broome and Chemung, but they intend to develop over the next 10 years. The last thing I want to say is, in case you haven't heard this, the wells, the shale is tight, and the gas needs to be released from it, and so the wells have to be hydrofracked. It's not just drilling into the ground and letting gas come out. It's a mining process. I don't know what you call it, but you'll hear more about it. But I just want to say that this is different. You haven't seen this in New York State. This is different.
Back to the idea of water. We've talked about where water comes from out of the streams and the lakes, and then we've talked about evaporation ponds and the possibility of liners or steel tanks and things to keep water on site. And then just recently in Chenango County, or earlier you mentioned that there is a water treatment facility, and in one of the flyers it says that treatment facility is running at capacity. And I was wondering if has there been any news from that treatment facility that's been taking hydrofrack water, produced water, and been integrating it back into the drinking water system? Are they cleaning it thoroughly? Do they have filters? Can we look at those filters? What's in it? And then, are there any water treatment facilities around here that could accept that quantity of water at any point in time, anytime soon? And if not, where is that water getting trucked to? And recently, a friend of mine told me about some gas folks in Pennsylvania talking about how they could drive over the New York State border and empty their produced water trucks on the roadside, because here it wasn't illegal, and that was a benefit to the folks in Pennsylvania, or to the gas companies in Pennsylvania. And so I was wondering if anyone here could speak to the idea of where that water is going to go, and how we can stop it from being in our like agricultural ditches, and in our pond water, and in all the road runoff everywhere that we go, other than following trucks around with a video camera and hoping to, I guess, call the police and say they're spraying water, I think.
I think there are probably more people in this room aware that the water treatment plant in Norwich is taking water. The DEC says that there is no water treatment facility in New York State that is capable of handling this. The water treatment facilities that are being used in Pennsylvania by the drilling that's happening in Pennsylvania, which is a little ahead of us, they've already had some experiences that we're going to have soon. Those people that run those water treatment facilities say that they're doing as much handling as much as they can, and they can't handle any more. And yet the DEC is saying that's where the produced water from New York State has to go. It's going on the roads. It's been going on the roads in New York State for a long time. It's not considered a toxic waste. It's considered an industrial waste. It's another category. They're spreading it on the roads. So I'm glad that you asked the question, what can we do to stop it? Because I don't think what we can do to stop it is to follow the trucks around with cameras. I mean, that will be a piece of the solution. But what we have to do is to make it illegal to do it.
Hi. My name is Anne-Marie Swack, and there's a bill before the State Senate and Assembly that would require all hydrofracking fluids to be non-toxic, and that's a technology that was developed because the industry was forced to do it in order to do offshore gas drilling and in order to protect the marine life. So the technology exists, and there's actually a bill out there to make this standard practice. And I wrote letters to all of our local state and state senators and assembly people. They're on the back table there with a little note on each one of them so that you can just, you know, look at where you live and match it up with a representative and sign it to promote that. Because I think if we know that the chemicals being added to the hydrofracking fluid, you know, being added to our water are non-toxic, I think it would go a long way to at least prevent some of the health hazards that would definitely be caused by the carcinogens that are currently being used.
I support that bill, and I hope that you work to support it. But part of the problem is that what comes out of the ground is a problem. It's not only what is put into the ground and then recovered, but there's all this stuff that's coming out of the ground, including these concentration of naturally occurring radioactive materials that's coming up on the equipment, and it's being scraped off right there. So if you have green stuff going down into the hole, you're going to have a lot of brown stuff coming back up. And I think it's important to address that. And the other thing, other comment I'd like to make is that although I recommend that people take the action of sending letters to their representatives, the bill, the gas company's dream bill that I spoke about before that set up the spacing limits, passed in the assembly, was it 135-7? 135-9? So the Sea Dog, our organization is encouraging people to take action locally as much as possible. The state law that governs gas drilling gives all power to the DEC and takes away the power that your town would have to say, no, Walmart cannot be here, or this rifle plant cannot be established in our town, or any of those things that state local governments have a right to rule on through their zoning procedures has been taken away by the bill that empowered the DEC. You local office holders have to decide whether you're going to let that stand, whether you're going to say, we have no right to control whether there's a gas drilling operation next to our school, whether the 100 tanker trucks that are going to supply the fracking liquid can be parked next to the hospital running their diesel motors, whether the town in the valley below where the drilling is happening has a right to govern the noise, whether it has a right to charge for the services that are going to be necessary as the injuries mount. Gas drilling, like oil drilling, is very dangerous. There are fires, there are explosions. There are chemicals that cover people that we don't know what the chemicals are, which the gas companies don't have to tell the hospital what the guy is covered with. So I think it is. We are favoring, our organization favors groups, self-formed groups like ours, to inform people about what the problems are and encourage those people to press on their towns and their counties and their villages. Get your water tested, do baseline sampling, find out where things are at. Do you have a fire department that can handle this? And refuse to let this happen if you don't have a fire department. We don't have an ambulance in our town. You know, we have a town of 1,600 people. Doesn't have ambulance service. Well, we've already got three gas wells in it. Well, what's going to happen when there's a gas well every quarter of a mile or every half a mile or every mile? There's going to be an accident. So the towns have to be, our feeling is that the towns have to declare moratoria and say this will not happen for a month, for a year, while we study what it is we have to do to get prepared. Because we believe that when the towns study what it is they have to do to be prepared, they're going to say we don't want it to happen at all. And it's up to us, it's up to people who consider themselves public citizens to make sure that everybody in their locality understands what's going on and starts pushing local governments, elected governments, to do governing instead of letting the DEC govern us.
Sorry. I'm Assemblywoman Barbara Lifton. And I just, you know, I came because I wanted to hear people's concerns. A lot of people have contacted me, called or emailed, and I'm very happy to hear from everyone. I'm very concerned once the law got passed, and I did vote for the original bill, the Sweeney-Parment bill. I was, you know, as someone's pointed out, it's a very complicated bill. And I was assured that it gave the state more authority to deal with the problems, to deal with the drilling companies and so on. But I'm very concerned about some of the things that have been said since then, and obviously we're very concerned about having enough people who are going to be able to enforce this and what's going to happen. But we're going to go through a long process of regulations and all of that. I have gone on the Ortiz bill that says we want a non-toxic fracking material if we're going to be doing that, and I will be pushing strongly for that. But meanwhile, we're going to hold public hearings next month in Albany, October 20th, 22nd. I'll have to, you know, contact me if you're interested in that date. And I'm sure some of you people will come and testify, I hope. And so I will be there. And also, the Attorney General's office has called me and offered to have a forum here, letting people know everything they know about your rights on the lease issue and so on. And I've told them, yes, I'd love to have them come in too. To my district and hold a forum. But anyway, it's very complicated. I know, you know, there are a lot of important issues out there, and I'm as concerned as you are about the issues of water and toxic chemicals and all of that. So, you know, I'm going to be pushing for a slow response here. You know, there, as many people see, there are forces operating in different directions here. Some people would like to see these resources exploited, and others are very, you know, And some of the same people have strong concerns as I do. So, again, I want to hear from people, and I'm going to be pushing for environmentally responsible state response to this major undertaking, or, you know, whatever you want to call it. So thank you.
Okay, good. My name's Steve Penningroth, and I have a comment and a question. The comment is about groundwater. People have been talking about the produced water, but I think it's also important to remember that if there's 5 million gallons of hydrofracking fluid going into the ground and 4 million gallons come out, that leaves a million gallons in the ground. And if you multiply that every whatever it is, square mile or so, that's an awful lot of hazardous chemicals in the ground that potentially can pollute groundwater and therefore drinking water. So just not to forget that once groundwater is contaminated, it is virtually forever. Gentleman said grandchildren, maybe. it can be polluted for a very, very long time, decades, centuries, depending on how fast the groundwater moves. So that's a very dangerous issue in my mind. The other thing that the question I'd like to ask is, what exactly is the state of New York doing to look at environmental protections? And since Assemblywoman Lifton is here and is presumably much better informed, certainly than a lot of people here, maybe she could speak to that or other people could speak to that, because is there a moratorium now going on gas drilling in New York State? No, there is not. But. In accordance with the new law. Okay, so the new law, so what we need to do is read the new law, and that will tell us sort of the roadmap for what's going to happen. Is that right?
I would just fill in a little bit of information there. When the law that was passed that affected the spacing, the well spacing, Governor Patterson instructed the DEC to look at the environmental impact statement that the DEC had last made in 1992. Long before there was such a thing as horizontal well drilling. And so, because with the way the DEC regulates the gas drilling, you don't get a hearing every time someone applies for a permit to dig a well, a gas well. DEC has what they call a generic environmental impact statement, in which they have looked at, okay, what is the environmental impact of gas drilling? And they've decided it's okay. And so it can happen, and therefore any individual application for a permit does not require a public hearing in that community to say, well, yeah, maybe gas drilling's okay somewhere else, but here we've got this, we've got a fault line or a sensitive water or a hospital next door to it or a school or something like that. There's no looking at the individual situation. So Governor Patterson said to the DEC, you have to update your environmental impact statement, your generic environmental impact statement, to take into consideration that there's this new technology called horizontal drilling. It's not a moratorium, according to DEC. They have said it's not that one can't apply for a horizontal well, a horizontal permit, drilling permit, before this re-looking at the environmental impact happens. But they would have to have a public hearing, and they've literally, they've said, no company wants to have a public hearing on this. So instead there's going to be a revision. The other thing is DEC has taken the position that they are only going to look within the parameters that they have before at the technology. For example, they're not going to look at the social or economic impact of an industrial activity on the scale being talked about, they're not going to look at that because that was not their instructions. I mean, they're just going to look at the technology of horizontal drilling in that narrow gas drilling way, not at the impact of a big industrial activity moving in. And one of the things that in hearing speakers from places where they've gone through this is there's tremendous implications. It's a boom and a bust. A lot of people come in. Actually, they make quite a lot of money. There's a little money flowing through. Sometimes they move in with their families. So the schools have a sudden increase for a period of time. The cost of rental housing goes up. It makes it very expensive for people who are making minimum wage in jobs that don't pay them enough to afford the increased costs. There are all kinds of impacts when you have an industrial activity come to your area. And then, of course, at some point, it does wind down. And there's that other dip. So DEC has said that they're not going to look at that. They're looking at the technology of drilling. And I don't know.
Well, they're also not looking at cumulative effects of having 1,500 or 15,000 wells drilled into the shale. They're not looking. looking at the cumulative effects. They're just looking at
the generic environment impact statement is going to deal with the effect of horizontal drilling in the abstract. Excuse me? Well, I don't know. I know that it's not about 1,500 or 15,000 wells. I know that it's only about one well if it's about water, and I don't think they have anything to say about the air at all. There's nothing in the generic environmental impact statement that will deal with air quality. Once that GEIS is done, whatever it says, we're out of the picture. If you let the DEC decide what is going to happen, we're going to be out of the picture.
Real quick announcement, we have about another 10 minutes or so to have comments and questions, and then we're going to have 15 minutes at the end for people to mingle and just talk with each other and make some connections and go around all the sides. There's a ton of information all the way around the outside, so go and pick up whatever papers you're interested in for more information, and we need to be out of here by 10 o'clock sharp or we get charged. So at 5:00, if everyone can help get all of our personal stuff out of here, that would be much appreciated. Make sure to sign in before you leave, because out of that, hopefully we can pull together some working groups about what people want to work on in terms of particular issues or particular ways of addressing this.
Hi, my name is Ezra Sherman. I'm from Vinette, New York. I just wanted to briefly underscore the realness and the enormity of this wave that's about to break over us. I went to a legal training in Binghamton about a month ago, and the first presenter was a individual who owned a drilling company said from Texas that said he was concentrating on Broome County drilling. He indicated that the southern part of the county was ripe for drilling. And during a question and answer, I asked him how many wells he sees in Broome County, the southern part of Broome County. He said in 30 years he sees 4 to 8 per square mile. In 50 years he sees 3,000 to 6,000. That's from an industry person, and that's what he thinks is reasonable. I asked him, well, considering that each one of those wells, a Marcellus well, lasts decades and is fracked numerous times over its life, and that each fracking consumes 1 or 2 or 3 million gallons of water, where are you going to get the water? I think he thought that my concern was taking water out of the aquifer. So he made the point that it is not realistic for the drill companies to put a well on property and pull water from the underground sources on the property. He said, he made a joke, he said, you know, in Texas we have droughts, but you guys have a lot of water in your rivers and your lakes. He said, what you guys really need to start thinking about is what the municipalities are going to do to treat the water, that is the produced water that people have been talking about here. So water is such a huge issue. Where are they going to get it? What's going to be done with the perhaps 50% of the chemical cocktail that's brought up out of the ground after they do a 1 or 2 or 3 million gallon fracking? And how is that water going to be transported to site? Consider that for each million gallons of water that they use in one fracking at one well, they have to transport that water in 210,000 gallon tanker trucks that would weigh about 50 tons apiece. That's for 1 million gallons of water, a modest amount for a fracking job at one well, one time in its lifespan.
Hello, my name is Nancy Young. One comment and a couple questions to anybody in the room. I don't have answers. I just want to say that a while ago, I was living in Western Maryland, where that's the coal mining region, okay? And it was really beautiful there. And I can't believe the environmental damage from strip mining. The water was, the Potomac River in Western Maryland was orange. Everybody's groundwater was orange. It would ruin your skin if you went in it. It would ruin clothing of it, like eat somebody's clothing immediately. So I just want to encourage people to think that that can happen in our area too. You know, that's just one environmental problem. And I guess the other thing that I'm not hearing and would like some, I would like to put into people's consciousness to think about is that one of the things that I saw in Western Maryland was that when they took mountaintops, when they took land and they stripped it, they made some effort at reclamation. It was never the same. It never looked beautiful again. It just was flat and kind of weird. But they made some effort at reclamation. I am not hearing anything about this at all in this room so far. And I'm just wondering. So they come in, they put their wells, they put their ponds, they leave it. Is that right? There's no, even if they could reclaim it after 40 years, you know, what's going to be left? What's it going to look like? You know, we live in a really beautiful area, and I just would like, if you are thinking of signing a lease, or if you have, you know, just go look at the Potomac River in Western Maryland. Go look at the coal mines in West Virginia. Go see what the land looks like, and it ain't pretty, I tell you. That's it.
Hi, my name is Janet, and I live in Spencer, New York. I am in terrible despair. I see this as one of the worst things I could ever think of happening to my land, to my family, to potentially my granddaughter. Okay, having said this, my whole area, I mean, like, I'm in the hot spot. Spencer, Vanetten, Kander. 65, I mean, everybody around me has signed leases, and really, out of total ignorance, nobody knew what they were doing. They, you know. Frankly, I don't know what can happen. In terms of my particular area, if so many people have signed leases with a very little, you know, protection, for the most part, the gas companies can come in and do anything they want. So what are the options?
I would remind you that even Farm Bureau people who have spoken at some of the meetings I've gone to have said that they expect their government to protect them. And that includes people who have signed leases. People have signed good leases. People have signed leases they're embarrassed about now. In many ways, I think we are all in this together. That it is not a matter of the people who haven't even been offered a lease because they own a postage stamp and those who have leases. We are all in this together in that there are, we want to demand of our elected officials, of our government, that they step up to the plate here and do the job of protecting people. I know it isn't easy. If it was, we probably wouldn't need to have forums like this. But you can't go and invalidate leases. They're contracts, and they're going to be acknowledged. But those leases, all the ones I've seen, talk about, they don't ever use the word moratorium because that's, you know, they wouldn't want to do that. But all the leases that I've looked at have these provisions that, well, if something interferes with them doing their gas drilling, you know, they get an extra time frame or something. So the experience in other states where this has already happened has been that people need to be informed, need to have more of these kinds of events in each of their local communities, because even the people who have signed leases want the government to protect them, sometimes from themselves. I mean, you know, to make sure that, everyone would like to have some money, But they also want their land to be healthy. They want their children to have a healthy place. They want, they don't really want the gas drilling to happen right next to the school. But if you ask the DEC says, oh, we don't have the right to, we, the local towns, don't have the right to pass an ordinance saying you can't drill within X number of feet of a school. That's solely the regulatory power of the DEC. Well, I think that we ought to challenge that. I mean, if we follow that interpretation and only are allowed to real property tax and roads, they say, we can do, we municipalities, local town officials and city officials, are exempted from everything else. Well, so we can't enforce speed limits. We can't do all kinds of different things that we have the obligation to do. So, I mean, you know, the answer is not an easy one, but I would urge people to have forums. I would urge them to begin to inform their elected officials and let their elected officials know that people are concerned and interested in this. I tell you, you know, when people come to my town board meeting, it's you notice it because not that many people do. And especially if they keep coming back to see what you did or didn't do. And so it's an exercise in democracy. And just like muscles get weak when you don't use them, we haven't really gotten used to exercising those democratic muscles very much. You know, once every 2 years or 4 years, we get to choose between a Republican and a Democrat. But, you know, there's more to democracy than that. So that's the best I can do.
I'm very sorry to say that we only have time for two more comments, and that's probably still running over. I guess that just proves that we're going to have to get together again soon and talk more about this. And one quick thing, and going along with that question, I think in terms of legality and our legal situation, we are in some very, very bad waters. They do already have a lot of the mineral rights bought up. They do already have a lot of the water things bought up. The bills already have passed. And I think, like the people in the film said, when it comes down to it, you gotta have people standing in front of those bulldozers. We need to be looking at what are the bottlenecks in the industry? What are the things that the industry insiders are most scared of? And how do we make sure that we go do those things? How do we find the bottlenecks of the things that they can't go forward with this until these things happen? And how can we make sure that those bottlenecks do not clear up? We've got a lot more learning to do first, but I think with enough people behind us, with a big mass movement, and with people willing to put their bodies on the line, we can stop this because we have each other.
Hello. Hi, my name is Leah, and I co-own land in Freeville with my friends. We recently moved here in hopes of living in a beautiful area and helping to maintain it that way. And my questions are very similar to the last ones asked, but we have neighbors that did sell their rights, and I don't think they knew what was going on. So my question is, well, I was kind of hoping to go over there and talk to them about it. This might be naive, but what are the chances of... How can you get out of a contract where people made a decision? That sucks. But okay, I guess I had a second quick question. If you own the mineral rights to your own land and you don't want them fracking under you, I can't go to the town hall or wherever I go and say, hey, I own the mineral rights and I don't want anybody coming under my land.
You can't.
I just wanted to speak to the bill. I called Assemblyman Ortiz's office this morning, and the bill for using non-toxic fluids in the fracking is now in committee, which is the Environmental Conservation Committee in New York State. It will, at some point, if the chairman decides that it's worthy to continue, it will be given another number and passed along. She encouraged me and everyone to contact the office of the Committee of Environmental Conservation in the Assembly and just voice your opinions and to the chair about the importance of the bill.
Thank you very much, folks. We're sorry that everyone wasn't able to speak, and like Julian said, it is definitely telling of the fact that we have a lot more of this to do, but we invite you please to go and look through this literature because a lot of your questions might be answered in there. And please check out our websites and sign up onto these listservs, and you can continue that discussion there. And thank you very much.